This is Microphone Check, hip-hop culture from NPR. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm Jizzle.
What up, Jizzle?
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah. I know, right? I was like on the way here when I couldn't find it and I was late. I'm like, fuck, you're like a year and 15 minutes late.
Better late than never, though, for sure.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, you're the perfect person for us to talk to right now because we've been talking a lot about writing and music and collaboration. And we've also been talking to a lot of people behind the scenes. And that's interesting to me, you know, because you started out in front and then you decided that you wanted to be a songwriter more so.
Yeah.
What made you go that way?
Well, at the time, I was super young and like the industry was changing. It was like post Napster mayhem and when everything was going digital, the labels were trying to figure out how to stop the bleeding. And so, you know, growing up and because I had, you know, some family members in the industry, like my aunt was in the industry at the time when I first decided I wanted to do music. When you thought, like, oh, you're going to be a rapper or an artist or whatever, I'm going to be successful, you know, a record deal used to kind of change your life, you know? And it was just when I was rapping and I had that momentum, you know, and I was a kid, 17, about to be 18. All of that had just changed suddenly. So when it went from, oh, we're going to do the deal and it's going to be this, and, you know, X, Y, and Z, by the time, it was like, hell no, you know, like.
It was like Z.
Yeah, or zero, actually. Like, but, yeah, so I think, you know, thinking about it now, I guess I was probably just a little discouraged and disappointed. But in that time while I was waiting, because we were actually waiting until I turned 18, because legally it would be easier to do a deal. That is when I discovered that I could write songs for other people.
Right.
And that would be, you know, a source of revenue. I knew I was writing my own things and I would have my publishing and, you know, and everything, but I hadn't thought and factored in other people into the equation. So while I was waiting, taking that time, I was like, well, shit, you know, it's not enough money now for me to want to sign and to feel like, I should be committed, you know, to a label or a company or a situation that I don't feel is worthy of me. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I could kind of just continue to hone my craft and build some stock. So.
Now, was that awareness because you had family that was in the music industry that you understood clearly the difference in the shrinking of the industry, or was it just you innately? And the reason I ask is because I would think that someone else in your shoes, maybe at 17, would just be like, I don't care. Like, I'm ambitious to want to sign a major deal and see what happens versus like saying, nah, hold up. Let me see some other alternative options.
I think it was a combination of both. When I first decided that I wanted to do music or go into the industry, I was in a group with my uncle, with my dad's youngest brother, who the one was in the boogie. And we started in a group. And when we went to my grandfather, told him, like, yeah, we want to do music too. And like I told you, my aunt was already in a deal. She was signed to Snoop. And, you know, the things were going, they were going relatively fast for them at the time, and they were doing well. And so he made us read everything, like all these books on, you know, what you need to know about the industry. Not just the Donald Passman, all you need to know about the music business. It was like every book, books on publishing, books on management, books on production. It was so funny. I seen one of these books in a friend of mine's house and I was like, man, you have no idea what you just did to me right now. So it was a combination of just that, and always I know I would feel it. You know, I would feel the right situation in terms of where I was supposed to be. And at the end of the day, you know, I think even at 17, I just kind of had a value on myself. I never saw anything that I did or want to do. I never thought about it, like, on a minimum scale, you know? Like, it's never been minimal for me. Like, I feel like anything that I do is going to have to be, like, huge. Mm. And it should be a big deal because that's what I'm going to bring to it, is the effort that I'm going to bring to it. You know, even back then, you know, I was 15, 16, going around the city, battling everybody, like, you know, getting my name out. Like, it was still just, you know, a lot of passion. I think your passion and your effort should be matched. Mm. I guess, I mean, not, and it's not always about money. I think it's just about the support and right. having control. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, now that I'm older, these things mean more. But, you know, I think back then it just didn't feel right. And it wasn't what everyone involved said it was going to be. And so just off of that, you know, I think if we start in that early, not keeping our word, then that can't be a situation I should be in. Mm.
That's mighty.
Yeah. I love school, too. So I was just like, fuck it. I'll just go to college and, you know what I'm saying? And get a degree, you know, whatever. I dropped out my junior year at Cal State Northridge. I didn't really, because I always had my career. Like, I always knew what I wanted to do. So when I did go to college, it was more just because I like to learn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being from, like, the inner city, it doesn't make sense for you not to go do something else or you'll end up doing something else, you know? So, yeah, like, you know, if I didn't actually have a career, I'd be a career student. I just, you know, I like school. And later on, I want to teach. But my official major was business marketing. I figured that would help me.
Yeah.
Along.
I was a marketing major, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a music criticism major, so. Yeah.
You stayed on target.
Yeah. But I ended up taking hella Pan-African studies classes and being real active in, the campus community activism. So I was just kind of, like, trying to find what spoke to me, too, so. Mm.
You should make a list of all those books that you read.
Oh, yeah.
Teach a seminar.
Oh, yeah, I got tons of books, yeah. I'm an avid reader, so, yeah, I could definitely teach a few seminars. But on the music specifically, I think you just go type. They got plenty now, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you have that sort of surrounding because, you know, you'll hear certain things growing up, just about anything, and you'll get advice for someone who's been there, done that. And sometimes when you're young, you tend to listen. Sometimes you feel like you're going to figure it out on your own. And with regards to the music industry, I often have told people just, you know, read certain books because it makes a difference. And I lived through it. I didn't know anything. I had no idea what I was doing. There was no direction. We just signed. And then later on was like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, you know, you learn. So that's great that, you know, you had that kind of environment. Can we go a little bit back to just you finding your voice as a writer? Like, mm-hmm. I've read something on your website that you said it was kind of like music was an escape for you.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I started writing poetry, like, as a child, like, very, very young, like, third or fourth grade. And at first, it was because I didn't like to do the homework at home. Because it would take too long, you know, and I wanted to go play or whatever, but I always did really well in school. So, you know, the teachers would kind of try to find a way for me to make up my lackluster performance in the homework department. So my fourth grade English teacher, her name was Mrs. Heath, shout out to her. She would do these, like, journal prompts. Mm. And I would never, like, write on subjects, like, or I just wouldn't do it when she, like, make up the prompt. But whenever she would say, all right, you could write about whatever you want, or, you know, you could write poetry, then I'd write. So she just started giving me the option to start to develop that. And I just kept on writing that. And then in the sixth grade, I was in a creative writing class. Same thing with the homework. Like, doing great in class, but not gonna get an A or a B because of homework. So she tells me, well, if you perform some of your poetry, then I'll give you an A in the class if you do it at this poetry reading. And, you know, sixth grade, poetry is not really cool like that, you know? Not to me, anyway. I'm like, I don't know about this. So. But I need to get this A. And this is before, like, I was like, I don't know if I'm a rap, you know? Like, I didn't think I was into rapping, but I was like, doing a rap is cooler than doing a poem. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. Just let me make a rap song. So I wrote my first rap song, and then I performed that. And it was pretty bad.
Do you remember the topics today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The rap was called God's Got a Plan. And it was like, something, something, something. God's got a plan. Going to take you from New York all across the land. All the way back to Japan. I ain't worried about nothing because God got a plan, you know? So, I mean, it was just bad. But everybody stood up and they clapped. Mm. And they were like, do it again. And I was like, oh, shit, this is a feeling I never felt before. And I think I might have something. And so I just began to write raps about everything that I saw or that I could think of or everything around me, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, when I say, like, writing was an escape, like, I didn't get into too much trouble, you know? I had, like, my moments, but I didn't get into too much trouble because once I did have that moment, which was a defining moment for me, that's all I focused on. Like, from that moment on, I just wanted to be the best rapper. I could be the best writer. So I filled my time. Like, everything else that was going on around me was just non-existent. You know, like, you know, the violence, you know, where the kids gangbanging, ditching, and doing whatever they were doing at that time. I'm in my room writing raps. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm trying to get beats. I'm on the internet all night trying to download beats and on the dial-up, on the DSL, where your beats take it 2 hours to get one little beat, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's what I meant by that. Like, it was an escape for me. It was a lot going on where I grew up.
Yeah.
You know, I could have went many different ways, but I didn't because I had that direction very young. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been grateful for that.
Turn up! Turn up! Turn up! Turn up! 2 in the morning, flying through Harlem. I'm the flyest nigga in Harlem. I ain't got no problem with money. Money's a problem. 2 in the morning, flying through Harlem. I'm the flyest nigga in Harlem. I ain't got no problem with money. Money's a problem. Niggas, get your fam kidnapped, get you robbed in. Cross me, see heaven. I'm flying down 7th in the 7th. Hear my name when you hit 111th. Cross 110th Street, they make legend. Money-making Mitch reincarnated. Money-making bitches in the condo and they all make it.
The room reeked the reefer. Don't mind her, she's a screamer. 290s in the ether. Preferential treatment. She needs time to get decent. I'm feeling so mitchy. Please, baby, no hickeys. 2 days without that good. She's so bitchy. Her heart to not hear, her words are unclear. She's thumping down there. You're about to start love tripping, you sex kidding. Ain't nobody ever had it this juicy since Biggie. I know you wanna see world, girl, I'm Big Billy. And I've been in cities just to eat Denny's, I'm really different. Are you aware that there's more than 6 senses? All the bottles are empty, this thrill was just kicked in the high gear. I double tapped her best friend in real life, nigga. Forever is what it feels like. Kobe playing with Mike.
What was the moment you said earlier where you realized that you could write for other people?
Well, I was waiting to turn 18 so I could do my record deal and I could, you know, like, oh, so I could get on, you know. But it was actually Kuda Love who asked me if I thought I could write for other people. And I was just like, I'll try it. So at the time, Lil Fizz had just recently went solo from B2K. It was like maybe a few months after, you know, that thing was a whole thing. And then he was working with Kuda Love. And actually, Mace was getting ready to come back. So right around that time. And then he was like, why don't you try writing, you know, on this project? And so it was me and a couple other writers, but we pretty much wrote the entire project, you know. And I did that at 17, you know, my last semester in high school and, like, my first semester in college. And that was where I kind of got to test out my skills and kind of, mm-hmm. you know. And then from there, it was like, all right, well, yeah, you can, I guess. So I'm very grateful to CUDA for that because, you know, before then it wasn't even, like, in my mind, I was, like, just one track. I was just going to be a rapper. And, you know, I love writing for other people so much. I feel like it's just an excellent way to just get out everything that I feel. Because I don't feel like everything, you know, I think of is for me to say or mm-hmm. it's going to be received in the way that I want it to if I said it. You know what I mean? Mm.
So with that, saying that, though, does that mean that you really want a more real closeness with your words that come through your mouth versus, like, I mean, it's still you. Uh-huh. But in terms of, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to say this, so I'm going to pass this on to someone else. The question is, I think some people are not really aligned with their words. Mm-hmm. And so they're okay with whatever it says, wherever it leads. And it just sounds like, and what that statement, it almost sounds like you're very cognizant.
Oh, yeah, I'm very conscious of what I say, how I say it. I feel like, you know, when you, as both an artist and a writer, I have a responsibility. As one person, being just one person, like, my responsibility is always going to be to maintain the integrity of everything that I do and that I'm doing the best no matter who it's for, if it's for me, if it's for someone else. But when I think of, you know, what my message is personally and how I want to come across and the things that I want to say, of course they'll be different for something I might do for, like, you know, anybody. Mm. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of songs people know I've written, but I'm sure there's tons they don't. Mm-hmm. And not because I don't want them to, but because when I'm working with an artist and I've had the luxury of being in with the artist, most writers don't get that. They have to work through the A&R or they have to kind of do some guesswork or research on what the artist might be thinking or what they're into. But I actually get to meet these people and I tap in. So in that sense, I'm not even telling my story. I don't want to.
Right.
I want it to be unique to who you are, whoever it is, and really expressing how they feel or where they are and not too much of what I think they think. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or what I think they should say, you know, from me. Like, if I was them, what I would say. But yeah, nah, and I know the difference.
Yeah.
You know, when I do stuff for me, it's for me. And then when I do stuff for other people, it's for other people.
Who's the artist that you've written for or worked with that your words were kind of like a real deep aha moment for them internally?
I think probably, wait, hold on, how do I answer that? Well, like if I wrote something and it kind of moved them.
Yeah, what I mean, yeah, aha, because, you know, it's sometimes you'll read something, it's someone else's words, but it's like, it's so, you feel like that is you, you know? And so you're supposed to sit with someone to kind of like find that moment, but sometimes I don't know if it often happens. And I'm just wondering who's that person that was just like, wow, this, you really understand.
I think maybe Puff.
Yeah.
Like when we worked on MMM, at first we were working on No Way Out, then we were working on MMM, and, you know, now we're working on No Way Out again, but we kind of didn't know what it was going to be in it. And it took a lot of getting to know each other. Like, you know, like we did like actual interviews. You know what I'm saying? Like this.
Really?
Just me and him.
Did you record it?
Yeah, I think they're on tape somewhere.
Great news.
Yeah, but, you know, but that was just a part of us getting to know each other and me getting to know, you know, the thought process. When we have somebody so talented and someone who's done it for so long and still so passionate about it and, like, you know, when you talk about integrity levels, like, his is uncompromising, you know, so.
Do you remember any of the questions that you asked him?
Dang. I don't remember. Not off top. I'm trying to think. I think I asked him. I think we talked about, like, how he got his name. And he was telling me that it had to do with the way he breathes and, like, how he kind of holds his breath sometimes. Yeah, it was crazy, but I don't know. Like that was the only one thing I think I asked, and then that's how he answered. But someone else heard those interviews, mm-hmm. like another like writer or whatever, and they actually put it in the song.
Mm.
So that's, you know, I guess that's kind of like an aha moment. But mm-hmm. I mean, we've done a lot of songs together, and there have, I think for every artist that I write for, I get like that one real personal record.
Mm.
There's always one, and I can't say. I said with Puff, because there's this one record, and I can't say because I just want them to put it out because I know how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But we got one we did, and it's the one. But I feel like most of the placements that I get, well, the ones that matter for me, they're always the personal ones.
Mm.
You know, Trey Songz, Fumble, I feel like, you know, on that album, that was one of the more personal records. I don't know how personal it was for him, but, you know, when he did it, but he did and added his things to it, seemed like he identified with it a lot.
Yeah.
And that was something, you know, me and Ty did independent of him, and then he came in and did it. So, you know, did his thing to it. My goal, though, I want to do some shit that no one else could do with you. And if someone like comes and say, "Oh, we want a record like whoever," I'm like, "Are they alive?"
Mm.
And if they say, "Yeah," I'd be like, "Go get them then," because all I could do is give you the jizzle, mm-hmm. you know. And I definitely mean for it to be personal. I mean for it to matter.
That's big. It's not easy to achieve that and to be able to pull that out of another artist, you know, to the core. And I understand that because I've worked with certain people and they wind up naming their albums after just a song that I've done, you know, just.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, it bugs me out. I'm like,
yeah,
out of everything you've done, like, this is, it means a lot, you know, that artist really connects with that moment, that vibe, whatever you're creating. So, you know, to be able to pull out like that personal record, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it says a lot about your level of awareness and skill set, you know? So.
Thank you.
No, it's dope.
That's the thing that kind of relates to something we were talking about in a previous interview, how I'm just like jealous of studio time and the way that people, when they're collaborating, like really get to know themselves and their people better.
Yeah.
Like that's very rare that anybody who isn't in this industry, like, isn't able to make art, to have somebody see them and have that person tell them what they really think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, man, the studio's a magical place, man. It's my favorite place in the world. Because any day, like, any session, I tell people, like, yeah, no matter what, I always have church, like, every day. Mm. If I get around just, you know, a few people, we're going to get to talking about something that really helps in terms of healing or opening up your way of thinking, you know, and that's church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to have that, you know, in the studio while people are creating and their minds are open and everything. And then you're just trying to get out what you've been feeling, because everybody's process is different. You know, everybody. Some people like to just talk about everything they went through in the week. You know, I'm trying to get back to like telling my story, because I feel like I done been through enough shit now, like, or, you know, like, just more things to talk about. But I've, you know, I've been writing for so long. The first things I did was write was my story. Everything was my story. You know, then when you learn to tell other people's stories, but, you know, I like to approach things from like a more creative kind of off the wall approach, more like what they not gonna say, but what can they relate to? And then some people come in straight with just how they feeling and get it all out. So it makes that environment for people to want to be, to share and to be open and be vulnerable. So, and really form those connections.
Let me just act like we in a writing session for a moment.
All right.
So
I don't think we can afford this.
So what they not going to say, Jizzle, is how this next election is really going to change the world. So what we going to talk about that's going to make it impactful for the people who are about to change the world?
I would say... What's a word first? Or what's the... For me, it's just the concept. Now, we know what we're talking about. What's the concept of what we're going to say? Like, what are we going to call it so people could grasp it? You know, whether, you know, depending on what you're talking about, is that people need to be more conscious of what's going on politically. Or, you know, they need to care more just about their fellow man. So it's like, what, are you doing this song called, like, Wake Up? But everybody's talking about being woke and woke up right now. I would just get to what the word is. You know, I would probably do some shit like alarm. The alarm's ringing.
See?
You going to keep on tapping snooze or no? You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Love it.
Oh man.
So some of that, when we met, you were in the studio with Ty. And you guys were working on something, and Ty was not comfortable with us being around. There were cameras and everything. Being around while you guys were actually doing that process. Of just like, I mean, and I can imagine, like, if you pull a little clip out of something like that, you could make somebody look foolish or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? But do you find that, do you feel a need for that privacy?
With Ty, he's just a naturally, like, kind of shy person.
Yeah.
It's so funny, you know, because he's, like, one of the biggest stars in the world right now. But he always has been like that. Like, I've always been, like, would depend. Now I've changed just a little bit because, you know, some people just want to be there to be there. So right. I feel like if you're not really contributing to the vibe or offering any energy, then you definitely need to get out. I've always been someone who performed better in front of an audience or when there's pressure, and I don't mind just having the energy of people being around as long as it's right, because that kind of helps me. I like to overhear the conversations, and because those are triggers for me when I write. But you know, when me and Ty first started working, it would just be me and him for hours, you know. So and that's just what he does. He'll sit and work for hours by himself. He doesn't need anybody to do anything. He writes, sings, produces, so I think he's just used to that.
If you believe in something, stand for it.
Still stand for my niggas doing life. Free my niggas right now. When I stand for my bitches doing right. A brother cooking breakfast, coming home at night. Stand for my niggas on the bottom. Never went to Gully, but they full of street. Now let's hear, yeah, I stand for my niggas. I'ma ride for my niggas. Die for my niggas. Big B was the first one to say, you the one, little nigga. And a few years later, we won, little nigga. Fuck whatever they doing. We outdone them niggas. And I stand for the shit. A bitch nigga try me. I've been praying for the shit. God damn it, I stand for. Everything I stand for. Bad bitches and a whole lot of stamps. In my passport, nigga, I stand for. Yeah. Never see me on the stand, though, nigga, I stand for. Ask your
my bitches. I'm a stand up nigga. You a real nigga, I stand up with you. I'm a stand up nigga. Tell my bitch I spend these bands up with you. I'm a stand up nigga. You a real nigga, I stand up with you. I'm a stand up nigga. Tell my bitch I spend these bands up with you. Stand for making those, stand for taking those, stand for what I know.
And a lot of people are that way, and it's a more personal thing. I know there's a lot of people that just work with just them, the engineer. You know me, I like to have the homies there sometimes, and girls and all type of stuff. But it depends on what the day calls for as well. So,
okay. You
know, I also have those times where I don't want to see anybody. Like, if I'm not there to work for you. It will work with you. If you're not going to be creative, then I don't want you here.
Yeah.
But I think it just depends. For me, my process is different. But I know there's, like, tons of people like that who just rather create and then share.
Yeah.
And then it's a real personal thing, you know?
Right.
No one wants to, like, I hate when I'm maybe working on a project and, you know, everybody wants to know your progress, you know, all right, how far along did you get? But I hate playing unfinished things. It's the absolute worst. Like, don't play anything that I did unfinished. And sometimes an engineer make that mistake because they feel the pressure.
Mm.
Everybody has a boss or a higher up, so they feel the pressure. Like, oh, well, I had to show them something. I'm like, well, don't show them my shit. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, because if I just did, like, some melodies and I'm just trying to get to it, I don't want you taking that as...
Yeah.
That's what I do, you know,
because
it's how you represent yourself. So I feel that, you know, but I don't really give a fuck at the end of the day. Like, I'm like, for me, I'm like, everybody could be there, honestly.
I'm not of that caliber. I'm like, close the door, don't nobody know, everybody out.
For real?
I mean,
not all
the time. Like, there's a point where I'm like, everybody come in, but there's a real, like, concentration point for me, and I'm just like, I need that space to figure things out, to mess up, you know, to figure out, like, my mess ups and to elevate it. And so I can only really do that in solitude.
Yeah.
Do you have, it's funny, we're talking about this, one of my production partners, we're asking because of Prince's passing and the amount of music that he has, and I have a friend who has a lot of music, and we're just talking, I said, you know, would you want all your stuff to be out if you pass? And he was like, I don't care. And he asked me, I said, yeah, I care because I got a lot of stuff that, in that silent time, it's just me trying to get to that higher place. And I wouldn't want all those other beats to just music to pop up when it's me scratching my head, you know, trying to figure some stuff out. Because I don't think it's like you saying, like, don't play it till it's finished.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about some of the stuff. Do you have a great body of work that is just cataloged up? Or you?
Yeah, we understand. Oh, man, I got so much music.
Yeah.
Tons of it. And I think specifically for that, like, for, like, when I do pass, like, then it's cool to have all of those things. I think your fans and your family and your friends, once you're gone, then they can, you know, they'll be able to appreciate that. Yeah. I think a lot of times when we make these things, when you're constantly creating, I think we grow faster than the music. Sometimes we grow as a person faster than our talents, and then they have to come to meet, and then that's where you get, you know, you have that moment of synergy, and that's when you find all your success and you go on your runs and everything, because everything about you is in synchronicity, you know what I'm saying? So when I first started doing music and recording, you know, I've been in the studio every day since I was, you know, when I was in high school, it'd be on the weekends, but since I was 15 years old, when I was grown, you know, as soon as I found out that Tupac recorded three songs a day, that's what I did.
Mm.
So,
speaking of Tupac, there's a picture of him in one of your videos. Did you put that in there? Was it in the studio in the vocal booth?
It was inside the I put him in there for when I rap.
That was intentional.
Three songs a day, not for the video. Oh. He's just there. That's where I recorded.
Okay.
And he was just there because that's what we doing, you know? Yeah. But, yeah, I think, you know, once I'm gone, I'm not sure it'll be up to me. I will make provisions for who it's up to. But I think I'd be okay with that. I don't know if Prince would.
Yeah, no, I don't know Prince, what his deal is, what his plans were with his music. But, all right, so you got a whole bunch of music. You got a body of work. Like, what are you waiting for? Like, what's the plan? What are you doing?
I mean, it's the same thing. We talk about, you know, growing and all that. Like you said, you want to share this finish. It's like, it's some of those things that I have, it's not that they're not good. They're just not me. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. It's not stuff that I'm comfortable saying now, because like I said, there is a responsibility. Like you said, the world is about to change. So the things that I'm doing and working on now, I am working on a project now. I want to make sure that I'm representative of what it means to be a black woman in America, to also be a black, you know, gay woman, or, you know, someone who pushes the gender roles, and make sure that I'm speaking to not only the experience and still having fun, you know what I mean? But that I'm representing myself and my culture in a way that's forward moving and forward thinking, not something that's going to set us back or set me back. You know what I mean? So that's the only thing. But I am working on something, because I know for majority of the people, this is the first time they're getting to meet me or hear about me, or they have a reason to really care. So for the people who do care to know where I come from and want a little more background and content, I am developing something that will kind of give them like a crash course.
Okay.
They'll be able to follow the evolution of, you know.
I love that.
Lady G to Jizzle, you know what I'm saying?
Would you ever perform a song somebody else wrote for you?
Of course. I mean, I can't do that and not, like, pay it forward, you know? I definitely would. You know, it would have to be the right song. But yeah, and especially if it speaks to me, and I feel like it's something that the world needs to hear, and I could be a vessel for that, for sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. It'd be good to have a break, too.
Yeah. No. Do you have any sort of, like, prepared response when people try to talk to you about ghostwriting in rap, when, like, purists, quote unquote?
Oh, like for the people that say, oh, I write everything and I like.
Right. Or for people who say if you don't write your own shit, then you don't count. That kind of thing.
Well, I agree with that. It depends on what we're talking about, though. Like, I don't think that a rapper who doesn't write their own raps could be the greatest rapper alive.
Agreed.
Yeah. Mm. But other than that, you know, my response is that music is a collaborative thing. Yeah. No one in life is a collaborative thing. No one can do anything on the levels of greatness, and that's what we're going for,
right,
by themselves. It just doesn't work that way.
I love that, because a lot of people think it does. You know, and they forget how many shoulders it stood on.
Yeah.
You know,
and I mean, you know, and I write a lot. I've written four songs for people. Even if I wrote every single word, I didn't do it by myself, because it wasn't something that I would have made without their input or without thinking of them. You know what I'm saying? Without just them being in my life and in my realm. So, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters. If it's good, it's good. Mm. Because it's a lot of people writing all they shit and it's terrible. You know what I mean? They wrote everything themselves and it's horrible. So it would behoove you to enlist some help for all the people out there who think they got it.
You know why I don't have to say anything? Because you have a very eloquent, talented artist speaking for me. I don't have to say it. Like, it's cool. We could talk off the mic before, but no, I mirror what you're saying. I just haven't found a nice, eloquent way to say it the way you did. Because, and plus, people may think that I'm being old and judgmental, and I'm like, no, really, I'm not. I could show you how your writing is just go back. You know, think about it. Just live life a little bit. Live the life.
Yeah.
Then write.
Oh, you have to live life, man. You know, I think I would probably get an award one day just for living life. I think I'm pretty good at it.
It's a new category.
Almost too good, you know. But man, it's so important. It's so important to my process.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling, relationships, just difficulties or what we view as difficulties until we come out of them, and just building your ability to problem solve and confidence at the same time. Like, you know, so important. I have, like, all the time, I'm having conversations I had when I was 15 years old. Talk about aha moments. I'm like, damn, that was crazy.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, just coming and being a valuable piece of information I could use. Mm. So that's why it's important to really live life and then be able to put it into your music, because that's where the substance comes from. Yep. And there's, you know, it has to be more to it than just the party or what we wearing or what we drink, you know, or, you know, the shit that makes shit look cool all the time when it's not.
Mm.
And we all know it's not. So, yes, it's important to get that experience and, you know, just go through shit. Because everybody's going through the same thing.
Absolutely.
All the time. Yeah. It's what I've learned. You usually find yourself around, you know, like-minded or like situational, y'all share the same situation on accident, because you attract what you are, you know what I mean? Mm.
That's the biggest thing I think you learned from traveling, is that it's not that different out there.
Yeah, but you gotta see it, man.
Yes.
Traveling just gives you extra swag. At the end of the day, it's just extra swag.
Yeah.
New words.
Yep.
New way to rock your shirt. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I've been doing this thing. I mean, I'm putting myself on blast because I'm going to just do it different anyway. But I've been, like, stealing people outfits. So I'll be like, hey, can I take a picture of you? And they'll be like, yeah, you know, they hype. I'll be like, damn, I'm about to get them overalls. But, like, all over the world, I've been doing it, just taking little flicks. Because, man, you got to think of, like, think of just, there's so many kinds of cool, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's, like, cool everywhere. Mm. So it's just, you know, we're all inspired by something, but I love to just see, like, the neighborhood cool person in a whole nother neighborhood on the other side of the world.
Respect.
Because we all got one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Where have you been recently?
Well, I was in Romania. Whoa. A month ago, I was in Bucharest, Romania, and it was crazy.
What's happening over there?
I was writing songs, man. Who would have thought? You know, it was amazing to me. Like, we think back to my little rap, even though it sucked, it was kind of true.
Just telling you know what it's gonna be.
I was working with this record label called Global Records that very big out there. One of their artists that she's been compared to, like, what would be their Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my focuses this year is kind of break into the pop world a little more and just expand, you know, my catalog and just kind of work on my writing ability and change it. I think I'm very, very proficient in urban music. And, you know, I think some would say more than, you know. So I want to constantly challenge myself and make myself uncomfortable. So I went to Romania. And, it was my first time traveling by myself across the country. I've been abroad, you know, in groups, you know, whatever, and doing different things. But that was, like, my first time going by myself. And that was a thing I needed to do, too, to know that should the opportunity present itself at a chance for me to grow, I wouldn't be scared because I had to go alone.
Mm.
So a better way than to fucking travel damn near 20 hours. It was like 20 hours on the way there by yourself, you know. But to do what I love. And I had a great time. They showed me a great time. Shout out to everybody at Global. I was able to see, you know, the city and just gain a new respect. That city is very historic. It has a lot of history. And they call it, like, you know, it's like the Paris of Eastern Europe. So call it Baby Paris. So it was very beautiful.
You're selling it nice. I might book a trip.
Right? Hey, man, pull up. They say it's real nice during the summer. They invited me back. I hold them to it.
Do you think there's any part of traveling alone as a woman that makes it extra, like, you should do it?
I mean, I think if what's stopping you from doing anything is that you have to do it alone, I think you want to get over that fast, you know, because a lot of things in life, a lot of times you got to go to the next level alone, and then sometimes you'll be able to bring a few people with you, but you're going to have to go back for that and make sure you could get back up. So you have to make sure that they're ready. So I think for me, it was just symbolic. I think as a woman, you know, you do have to be careful, but, you know, but not any more careful than you would have to be walking the streets at night alone. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like I do.
I didn't feel in danger, and I was alone with the people sitting next to me. They were like my homies the whole time. Mm-hmm. They woke me up, made sure I ate every time. And you know, like, you worry about it, and then you just end up being, you know, exactly where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And so just even from that, like, the moment I got on the plane, like, when they start trying to comfort me, not even knowing, you know, then was cool. And the older guy next to me, he like prayed the whole time. I said, so shit, we can't be going down or nothing like that. We all prayed up.
Yeah. My mom always said that to me, that it was important for a woman. She's like, before you get married, you have to live alone and you have to travel alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mostly just so you know you can.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think moms just knew that. Like, you have to know. Yeah, I think in life, like, most of it, we're all scared to be alone. People end up in relationships that they don't want to be in because they don't want to be alone, and they don't go places because they don't want to go alone. Mm-hmm. And if you just learn to just go, it always just works out.
Like it'll be okay.
Yeah, it works out. So, yeah, definitely I agree with your mom on that. And I had to learn that. That was, like, one of the things, too. I used to not want to go to places alone. I used to not go to the studio at night. I used to not do a lot of things. And then I was just like, we got to get this together. Mm-hmm. And then the minute that I started to do all those things that I was scared to do, you know, that's when things started to happen for me, started to grow. Like, when you start to remove those limiting beliefs from your system and develop more open and encompassing ones, then, you know, I think life opens up in different ways.
I don't know if, like, your full credits are public, but I know a number of the songs you've worked on. I can guess maybe at a couple other ones. And a lot of them are, like, pretty sexual.
Yeah.
No, finish.
I was trying to think. Maybe I'm like, maybe you're right.
Maybe. Okay, I don't know the percentage. And I don't want to guess. But how do I want to ask this?
Are you thinking about sex 24/7?
I feel, this is getting very deep into my personal life, but
I don't know. I think I attribute that mainly to Ty being one of my main writing partners. Okay. So I think he helps my percentage of sex songs a whole lot.
Yes.
And I don't know. I don't know. I never actually even thought about that. I was like, damn, you're right, maybe. And then now I'm like trying to, like, is there a song in specific?
Two things. Well, one, okay. I think the funniest song on Free TC is Horses in the Stable.
Okay, I didn't write that.
Okay.
All right, so yes. I'm out of that one. Perfect. Shout out to Tish Hyman. That was her. I'll make sure I get her by here and talk to y'all. So
yes,
you could talk to her.
But I was actually thinking, because Teddy Riley, you were involved with him really early. And I was just thinking Teddy Riley played into that, and then Ty, and that's what upped your percentage.
Yeah, I think, because, you know what, I like you say, like, Teddy, he's like a godfather to me. And he actually helped put my first demo together, which helped me get some attention from the labels back then. But yeah, I did come up on 90s R&B.
Right.
So yeah, I guess 90s R&B is a more kind of sexually sensual driven type thing. I do like that. I do love songs and ballads. And I do think music should be sexy. Sexy has changed now with the times, and everything is a little more in your face and kind of, you know, raunchy. It's raunchy. But so I think that's what it is. I think when you creating anything, you have to evolve with the times. Mm-hmm. So I think it is just there's a little less censorship and people want the shock value. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of just think like that. So, you know, it's cool. But I do. We got to that. You see, now I get it. Yeah. So you're right. I'll take that. I will.
I was waiting for you to flip it on and be like,
oh, I know, so, me too. Yeah.
So what you saying is just sex is constantly on your mind? Are those the songs that you gravitate towards, friend?
Yeah, she's like, I love horses and stable. I'm like, don't put that on my jacket. That is a good song. It's a perfect song, too. Yeah. That
was, well, it's also a really funny song.
Yeah,
and that's why good. I've always liked Ty. Because, like, I like Ty from that Whoop tape.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, that was very raunchy, but in a ridiculously, but still witty way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it makes me laugh.
Yeah, nah.
Makes me happy.
Tish and Ty nailed horses in the stable. They nailed it for sure. They nailed it.
Is there any type of song that you are really, like, trying to write? You feel like you have to work up to it. Eventually, you'll.
Yeah, I there is. I am trying to write. Change is gonna come.
Mm.
Yeah, whatever that is for now, for my people in this time of what's going on, and I don't think there's much of that when you listen, and we're going back to. You know, and that's back, but there's not that emotion where, you know, in the music so much. I mean, people get close, you know, they get close, but there's just not that raw, that pain, but still with the lyrical content that is just touching your soul and making you feel like you're gonna be okay.
Mm.
So that's what I want to do. One of those, a series of those. I want to make the songs that people are going to listen to and it really gets them through something. Or, you know, I believe I could fly. But yeah, for sure, change is going to come. Like, I just something that feels like that. You know, when you hear that, you're going to cry almost damn near automatically.
Mm.
And I have to work my way up to that and just really get more involved musically and just spend the time on really doing it, because it's so easy to do other things and in the meantime and to constantly do the things that I'm good at. But sure. Yeah.
Do you play an instrument?
No, I don't play anything. I started on the guitar for a while, but yeah, I don't feel bad about not being able to play anything. But I have started taking up production, you know. One day, though, I definitely, it's on my bucket list. I definitely want to learn to play an instrument just to know. I don't think it's going to make me better or worse.
I wasn't sure that's what you meant by, like, knowing more musically or.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, just being more involved, even in the production process.
Okay,
you know, like, like I said, I'm starting to produce and I have producers, but it's just still just being more active in that process instead of, oh, well, what did you come up with?
Right.
Let's hear it, like, and actually, let's make this and really try to create this vibe.
Being able to say what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think I'll play the guitar, but I think I have piano fingers, but I don't know.
You mean, like, extension?
I think they're, like, kind of.
Do an octave.
No, you good with guitar with those.
Yeah, but I like to keep my hands soft, like a lady. You know what I'm saying? I used to do gymnastics. I stopped. I started getting calluses right here. I said, oh, no, that's not going to cut it. That ain't going to, you know?
You know, through this interview, I was just sitting here thinking, I often get asked, like, who's your favorite rapper? And I'm sitting here just listening to you. I'm like, Jizzle. And I sincerely mean that, you know?
Thank you.
And it's because, and I think this is what we try to do with Microphone Check, is to really expose people to the other side. The inside, the person inside of the artist. And sometimes you get to do that, and sometimes you don't as much as you would like to. And it's really important for me, especially as hip-hop takes on new meaning as it evolves. And what it meant to those artists of the 70s is different than what it meant to those of the 80s and so on. But what doesn't change is the sincerity of a person and the place of intellectual evolution. It's important. Some people become artists for whatever reasons. Some of it's frivolous. And I don't think that there should be any shame on that. But I think there comes a point in life where you want to offer more. And so listening to you, it makes me feel great about the future, whatever it's going to be, you know? And so asking, you know, who's your favorite rapper? I had to now, in listening to you in this conversation, it's like, well, what's the criteria? And for me, what the criteria is now after this interview is, who is that person?
Thank you.
Like, factor in the skill, the rhymes, how they put it together, all that cadences, like all that lyrics, all that. But then who is that person? Because that matters. At least for me, it matters in the scheme of what hip hop culturally, the origin of this and how it brought people together. It was to take people out of conflict, out of stressful, oppressive situations and bring us together. So just listening to you, I'm like, yeah, Jizzle's my favorite rapper.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. It's one of the best compliments because it wasn't really, like, on my ability. And it's cool because I think we all know I'm able.
Yes, ma'am.
But that's really, you know, that's a goal of mine. That's what I work on every day. Like, I know that I could be successful in music, and if I choose to do anything else, that I can be successful at that. But what's most important is to be successful as a human being. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to do every day. I work on just trying to be the best version of myself and to be used in the ways that I can, you know, positively, you know, hopefully, you know what I'm saying, for the most part, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't take that lightly. And it means, you know, if you could recognize that, then I should stay on the path and keep on doing what I'm doing. And that's important for me. So, and it's cool because a lot of people are going to say, oh, I like your song. Oh, I like your outfit. Oh, yeah, I'm proud of you. You was on the billboard. You did the... And it's just like, you don't know. I could be at home doing all type of shit, you know? Like, I could just be a fucked up person, but... And you don't know that because you're caught in the trapping. So I appreciate that. Mm.
I mean, that would be really interesting if we started doing Top 5 Dead or Alive based on quality of...
character.
Yes. Yes.
They'd be like, oh, shit, I think, who's your favorite? I'm going to have to go with, give me Chameleonaire. Number one. Right. He's a good dude.
Right, exactly. You know? You said that. I was like, oh, word.
Yeah, you know?
Yep.
And it changes the whole game. Hell so, yeah.
It'd be funny to see where that, like, Venn diagram of people who are good people and people who are, at this moment in time,
and how many
cashing
of them are,
in.
Yeah, and how many of them are good people and good rappers?
Mm. Yeah.
Because if you did that, then Tupac would be the greatest, period.
Mm.
Still. He got a little bit off the rails closer to when it was time for...
Yeah.
His demise, but he's always had the purest intentions.
True.
I don't think there's been one artist whose intentions have been pure.
Mm.
More pure. You know what I'm saying? Which is interesting, you know, because I sit and I watch his interviews, you know, and they like the old ones or the unseen ones. And I'm like, man, who was this guy? Like, this kid.
Oh, yeah.
That trips me out, too. Like, I think about, you know... Back then in the 90s, everybody was so young, but it was like they were mature.
Yeah, Andre and Big Boy were like 19.
20. Like, there was a maturity, and now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've noticed.
I mean, I trip out, I'm like, damn, bro was like 21. Oh, that's crazy. You know, and you see, and you have people who are successful and doing their thing, and they're still young, but it's the thinking is different.
It's a different world.
You know?
It's a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, we have this debate all the time because I sort of resist putting that pressure on hip-hop musicians because I don't think people put it on rock musicians or, you know, the burden of the community. And Tribe was incredibly advanced when you guys were still in high school. And so the argument is like, if we could do it, then you guys could see. That's the face he makes every time. If we could do it, then y'all can do it. However, well, I mean, you have to be a special person.
Well, so in our defense, because I'm a part of this generation, but I do feel like because I've been in this so since I was so young, like I do feel kind of like a young OG, like Fabulous. You know what I'm saying? Like, but there are 100 times more distractions on the youth today, purposely. Like, you know, like you, when, you know, back then, you know, 80s, 90s, hip hop, early 90s, late 80s, like there was no internet. There was no, you were left to your devices. That's why people were so good. You know what I mean? They were so good, and they were thinking, and there was, you know, there was books. It was no, if you were poor in the inner city, you didn't have cable.
Right.
You know, so you got to think now, the kids are being distracted from the moment that they're even born. You know, like I have a godson, he's 1 year old. And to calm him down, he needs the iPad watching Yo Gabba Gabba the whole time. You know what I mean? So it's like, you got to think you start at that age, and it's only increased. And then when you have, you know, a lot of the music kind of definitely influencing the kids to be a certain way, the popular music, but the popular music is being fueled by, you know, the big corporations. So, in our defense, I have to say that it is a different world. And so you see some people trying to come away from that, but you can't escape really what the reality of today is and what the times are. You know, you can't not get on the internet. You can't, you know, I mean, you can say you don't watch TV. I got rid of my cable, but I still watch some of the bullshit. You know what I mean? So it's so much of it.
Yeah.
And then it's so, you're going to end up, you know, you're going to end up isolated or with no friends if you don't partake in just, you know, even a little bit. You know what I mean? So I think that's the big difference. I know even from when I was in high school to now, you know, my little sister's in college, you know, so it's like even that gap is like, oh, shit. This is what y'all want. This is what y'all do. Like, this is how y'all feel. All right. You know, the kids are a little lazier, but that's the world. The world is designed like that. And, you know, and this is when you're older and you see like a kid do something, you be like, ah, I did that before. But these kids, this is it for the first time.
Right.
Look at how much shit they get for the first time. Like, they can't go back.
Yeah.
Try giving, you know, a cassette player. Taking an iPod, giving the cassette player, they'll be like, what are you talking about? Like, so it's easy for you to, like, prefer, if you know some OSHA, you can be like, ah, man, I know that. I prefer to hear it on vinyl. I prefer to hear it in, like, but if the first thing you got was an MP3 player, an iPod, iPad, you ain't trying to hear shit about the Lisa or the, you know what I'm saying, or the Walkman. Like, you wanted, the next thing you wanted to do is, you know, serve you some food out of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you get this to the next level? So I think that's the difference, too, is that they've diverted the attention and the emphasis on things that don't matter. And, you know, you can't blame the kids for that.
No, absolutely not. If anything, it's not even blaming. It's just like, if someone doesn't know something, they don't know it. You can't fault anyone for that. It's just you got to help them, you know, expose them to some other things so that they can see and then discern it from a different set of eyes. It's like, oh, I didn't know that. And now that you know, there's an awareness, then it could be nurtured in a different kind of a way. So, you know.
That's the best part. That's what I like now, though. I see younger kids, you know, sometimes teenagers. I know a lot of them that they're not even here. I don't even know where they are. But there are some kids, you know, some jewels. I got some in my family. I have, like, both ends of the spectrum. Some of them very aware, very conscious of what they're doing, what they're eating, what they're listening to. And then the other ones who could give a fuck. And they just still want to see and be a part of the family and know what you want. Because it seems like what you're doing is working for you, but at the end of the day, they got to go back to the environment where they are every day, and that's how they're living. So I am excited, though, about that, that there is youth asking questions and aware of what's going on and wanting to be better, and, you know, because we are in the age of the savants and all, like, these kids are next-level genius, you know, so the conversation is up, even though it's a different way of going about it. You know they're there. You know, you see the memes.
Absolutely.
You see the memes.
Brilliant.
You know they up.
Brilliant.
They up, but they just, it's misdirected. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So how do you take it from the next level to the, from the meme to the memoir, or, you know what I'm saying? To the meme, to the blog, to the movement. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're up, some of them.
No doubt.
Yeah.
You're up, so.
Yeah.
I got hope. I'm feeling real good. I'm feeling real good. I know you about to take it somewhere where it's supposed to be. So,
man, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
man. Thank you so much for doing this and rescheduling. And
oh, man, it took a long time, but, man, I'm so happy.